A simple marker on Route 397 in Buckstown, Maryland, indicates the spot where Harriet Tubman is said to have been born as the slave Araminta sometime around 1820. 10 miles away in Cambridge, Maryland, you'll find the Harriet Tubman Museum, which offers information about her life. Those two spots are just a couple of many landmarks listed in A Traveler's Guide to the Civil Rights Movement. The author Jim Carrier joins us now from the studios of Alabama Public Radio in Montgomery, Alabama, and it's good to have you with us today.
Thanks, Neil. How are you?
Very well, thanks. What made you come up with an idea for a traveler's guide to the civil rights movement?
I guess it was to answer my own questions. I came down here about 5 years ago to work at the Southern Poverty Law Center and began wandering around Montgomery looking for the history. And there was very little to see. Few signposts, no brochures, no museums. And yet we were getting people like myself, from all over the world, including Africa, coming and really making pilgrimages to these sacred spots in the African-American civil rights history. And so I thought it would a guidebook would be useful.
You, in your introductions, write, Montgomery, Little Rock, Greensboro, Birmingham, Selma, Memphis, the names alone evoke battlefields. Yet on the battlefields of the Civil War, which I guess certainly counts as part of the Civil Rights Movement, but on those battlefields there are all kinds of memorials and markers. Many of these places you write about have very little.
Probably more than half in my book are not marked at all. And I find it kind of curious because, really, when you think about it, the Civil Rights Movement was a revolution. You know, in 10 or 11 years of space between 54 and 65, we really forced, not we, but people in the South, forced America to honor its creed. And usually 50 years after an event like a war or a battle like this, you know, there's been reconciliation, the monuments are up. After the Civil War, for example, by 1915, 50 years after, President Wilson went to Gettysburg and the soldiers of both sides greeted themselves, and there were almost 1,000 monuments up in the Confederate States to the lost men and to the lost cause. Well, by comparison, in civil rights country, there probably are no more than 100.
Are there still aspects of resistance to remembering some of these places? These are pretty hot issues not so long ago.
Yes, I think there is resistance. There's lingering shame, and not simply just on the white community either. I think African Americans sometimes made the choice not to tell their children. Many of them have still not told them about their ancestors in slavery. Some have chosen not to tell them about, you know, grandmother walking in civil rights marches. But I think the greater issue is some sort of resistance and perhaps the lack of political will at this point to share a space that for so long has been dominated by the Confederate soldier and still is to many ways.
There are guides to all kinds of places in this new book. We'd like you to call us if you have curiosity about something that may have important that happened in your town to see whether it's listed in the Traveler's Guide to the Civil Rights Movement. Our telephone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And our email address is totn@npr.org. And, of course, there are all kinds of places that are important. I'm just glancing through the book. Of course, you have the Edmund Pettus Bridge the Birmingham City Jail, but of course there's also the studios in Muscle Shoals, Alabama, where Aretha Franklin recorded the great song Respect. We'll have more on this story when we come back from a break. Again, our phone number is 800-989-8255. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Today we're speaking with Jim Carrier, the author of A Traveler's Guide to the Civil Rights Movement, which is just out. What are the civil rights landmarks where you live? Join the conversation. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Or email us, totn@npr.org. And let's go right to the phones. And Tina's with us on the line from Syracuse, New York.
Hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to call in. I'm so glad that your guest has published a book because for our first anniversary 5 years ago, my husband and I did our own civil rights tour trip. We drove from Syracuse, that obviously were the site of the Jerry Rescue and other civil rights, you know, back during the slave movement. But we drove from here down to Memphis, and went through Memphis and then down to Jackson, where Medgar Evers lived and obviously died. Then we made our way down to New Orleans, then looped back up through Alabama and Tennessee. And it's just amazing because there's a local senator here, Nancy Lorraine Hoffman, that does a civil rights trip for students. And one of my fellow teachers at the time always got to go. So I said to my husband, we're going to go and do our own. So I just wanted to call in and really congratulate your author, because there are those of us who, I'm an assistant principal now, but I'm a former social studies teacher, that really, you know, when we teach about the civil rights movement, we just want to empower students, because really that is a sign of what people can do, because indeed, you know, it is people that make changes. So I just want to say thank you, and I thought I'd call in and tell you about that.
Well, thanks very much, Tina. Before we let you go, though, what was the most impressive thing you saw, do you think?
Oh, my goodness. We went on the Natchez Trace Parkway, and there are civil rights landmarks there, between, obviously, in Jackson. But we saw a lot of other things along the Natchez Trace, and one of the things that we came upon was an old plantation that was actually shown in the movie about Medgar Evers' death, in his Whoopi Goldberg movie where she played his wife, Ghost of Mississippi. Mm-hmm. And I think that was one of the most haunting things, to know that that so much happened there and so many people lived and died for the civil rights movement. Just, it was very haunting. But I would say that going to Medgar Evers' home was very powerful for us.
Okay.
And it's something that you don't see.
Thanks very much, Tina.
You're welcome.
Jim Carrier, she was talking about the Natchez Trace. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, you know, Mississippi is one of those states which is a great battlefield for civil rights, but it's the one state, I think, other than Florida, where you could travel all day and not have any idea that the civil rights movement took place there, unless you knew where to look. The most common monument, I guess you could say, are where people are buried in graveyards. Medgar Evers' home, it looks exactly as he left it, the driveway where he was found dead by his family or wounded. And in fact, there's no sign there. They plan to make it a museum eventually, but people do find their way into that neighborhood. There's something about standing in these momentous spots where this history took place that I think really makes these stories come alive. They actually filmed a movie in that driveway using his original home.
Let's get another caller on the line. This is Mark, who's with us from Minneapolis.
Hello.
Hi, Mark. You're on the air.
Well, thanks. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to call in. I've gone with my family and my church through, like, Memphis and gone to Jackson a couple times, to Alabama, Montgomery, Selma. And a couple of things I wanted to say is definitely when we were in Jackson, we had been part of the lecture series that was down there, and had heard about different things in the civil rights movement and the period after the Civil War, and then when the Constitution was rewritten after Reconstruction. It was really interesting. We went then to the Alabama State History Center there in the near the Capitol,
mm-hmm.
Jackson. And you could definitely see there was a real bias in the way the civil rights story was even told publicly. So I think you definitely do see. And when we were in Selma, we talked to people who had grown up there, and I think there's an embarrassment among whites and even blacks that they didn't get involved, that we kind of just sat back and we were watching it and didn't know what to think, and or that we were, you know, passively just on both sides, accepting the status quo and afraid to work against it. So it's a really interesting thing.
Thanks very much, Mark.
Thank you very much.
His experience is not unique. I don't think you write in the introduction, for example, where resistance was strongest, history ran deepest. Voting rights marchers in 1965, for example, thronged a Montgomery Street where 100 years earlier crowds cheered the president of the new Confederacy as he signaled the start of the Civil War.
You know, the civil rights movement took place, the reason it took place, it's so obvious, but I'll state it, is where the slaves were. And so every place you stop in the South has a civil rights movement. Every no-name crossroads, every cafe, library, school had to have their own hero that went there and demanded their rights for the first time, even after the laws were passed. It's interesting, Ed Montgomery at the state capitol, where the first capital of the Confederacy, you can see the star where Jefferson Davis was sworn in, but you'll see no mention at all of what really was the climax of the civil rights movement, the 1965 Voting Rights March and Dr. King's greatest speech, because neo-Confederates in uniform have actually literally shouted it down at the State Historical Commission meetings.
Now, your guide is largely devoted to the states of the old Confederacy, the Jim Crow states, also as
yep.
you define them. There are a couple of mentions in other states, and before we let you go, I have to ask you, how did Rosa Parks' bus end up in Dearborn, Michigan?
Well, you know, it sat rotting in a field outside of Montgomery for 30 years. No one wanted anything to do with it. And a fellow who owned it tried to sell it on eBay. And they found a scrapbook that supposedly proved it was the very bus that she was arrested on. And on an online auction, the Smithsonian, the City of Denver, and the Ford Museum bid, and Ford won for $430,000, dragged that hulk up to Dearborn, spent another $300,000 on it, and now with $1 million invested, have put it on display for standing room only crowds. It's probably really the single best known icon of the civil rights movement, and unfortunately Montgomery lost it.
Mm. If there was one place that you could recommend that somebody really had to go, where would it be?
Well, I certainly think, I'm going to say two if I may. One, I certainly think you need to go to the hotel where Dr. King was killed in Memphis. A very unusual story. They turned it into a museum, the very first museum. But just south of there, I think the most haunting place, and there's no marker whatsoever, but there is the building in Money, Mississippi, where Emmett Till, in the summer of 1955, said something to a white clerk and for that reason was killed and put into the Tallahatchie River behind that store. That store has fallen down, ivy growing up at the side, but you still get that sense of terror and isolation that he must have felt. And I think everybody should see that.
Jim Carrier, the author of A Traveler's Guide to the Civil Rights Movement, and he joined us from Alabama Public Radio in Montgomery, Alabama. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Neil.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.